Right. So good. So you guys have now we had some good ideas. Mm-hmm. Definitely had some good ideas. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you some of the answers that the greatest sages of the time said. So Rabbi Yeshua said, have a good friend. You have to have a good friend. You have to have good advice. Meaning you need external advice to be able to tell you from someone from the outside to be able to see your situation. So it's a good friend. What is a good friend? Someone that knows you and can give you what? What kind of advice?
Objective
advice. Something that you can't see inside. Rabbi Yossi said, a good neighbor. Mm. So it's someone that knows me, you actually probably better than a friend because he lives next door to you, right? So he knows kind of your bad stuff that maybe your good friends may never have seen or witnessed, right? Because they can hear screaming next door. They can hear, you know, whatever else is going on at different points, right? So maybe that's that idea. Right, so that's someone said here, which is beautiful. Someone got it on point. This Roet Anolad, I think it was Kobe, that he said that to look into not look only into the future, but to be able to see the consequences of your actions. To be able to envision future results from what your choices will make. Right. So if I go this route, I should envision what is the end result? What should be the consequence? And if I go this route, I should be able to envision what the different consequence and be able to envision the consequence of my actions by just seeing them without having to make them. Then what? You already know what the right decision is because you want to get to point B. But if you're going the opposite direction, then you know that's not the right way to go. That's not the voice to listen to, right? And then, another one says, a good heart. I think that was kind of what we were kind of saying, kindness. Mm-hmm. Having a good heart, being able to look at it in being able to say a good, looking at things with a, in a warm way, in a kind way, that actually is in a way that will help you understanding in depth. But the greatest answer, and there's a few others, but the greatest answer and the correct answer, quote unquote, is Ein Tova. To have a good eye. That encompasses everything. That encompasses everything. To have a good eye. What does it mean by a good eye? So this is a multiple, encompasses all aspects. How does it encompass all aspects? Now I want to build on this concept. And be able to build on this concept, hopefully will give us like a perspective and give you a perspective in your own life and something that you can use in a very practical way in your own life. And I'm going to take it from our greatest sage and the one that really is the benefactor. We benefit right now. The whole Jewish people are here in the way that we are today is really right now from one person. Anyone want to guess who that one person is? Or I should really say two people, but it's really a couple. But we'll see in a second. What? So, really, we can say Moshe. We can maybe say Abraham. You're right. But right now, where we are, it would be almost the last person, and it was Rabbi Akiva. Oh. And the only reason I say it's Rabbi Akiva is because Moshe obviously was first, and even before Moshe was Abraham. And each individual, the greatness carried the next generation. But really where we are, to the point where we are right now, is only because of Rabbi Akiva, right? Why? So anyone knows this story? The story is an incredibly powerful one. It's like, I'm telling you, if we would have ever made, I remember even in, I guess 2000 when I was still fresh off watching movies. I just stopped, right? Stopped with the addiction. I was envisioning, when I envisioned and I heard about Rabbi Akiva, I thought, this would be the perfect movie ever. There would be no bigger blockbuster, no better movie ever, because it really combines, and maybe the following week we'll talk about the last day of his life. I was thinking about it because it's probably the most powerful moment ever. Right? And if I'll give you a sneak peek, if you've ever seen, anyone ever seen Braveheart? Mm-hmm. No? Never seen
Mel
it?
Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson? Last, anyone? No? He's anti-Semitic for sure.
I saw the movie. It's pretty good.
Huh? Yeah. No, the last scene, that's Rabbi Akiva. That was made up. Guarantee that never happened. We'll talk about it a different time. But back here, going back here, what happened encompassed Rabbi Akiva's greatest moment? What did he become? So first of all, we're introduced, the Medrash, the oral law brings down that Rabbi Akiva knew zero. We're talking about the greatest rabbi, basically, of that generation, and you could say modern time in the last 2,000 years, was Rabbi Akiva. And up till 40 years old, he knew zero. Knew zero. Can you imagine that? The guy until 40 didn't know the alphabet. He was illiterate. Completely illiterate. So what happened? What was that major transformation? Anyone take a guess what would be the major transformation?
Perspective.
He met the right woman. Oh. Everyone says, Right? What happened? The story itself is unbelievable. The story itself is really unbelievable.
It's like every Disney movie too, right?
At least Disney has some parts right? Some. So the idea was what happened? He was actually, I guess you can sort of almost, you know, crudely I can say he was the what's the guy that mows the lawn? The landscaper. He was the landscaper of the richest Jew on the planet. Imagine, like, I don't know, who's the richest Jew on the planet? Sheldon Adelson?
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg, right? They're probably close.
Adelson.
Right? Sheldon Adelson. He owns all the hotels in Vegas, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Makes $1 million a day. One every day. At least.
Wow.
Huh? No, but he has connections. But the idea is what happened. So you can imagine the landscaper, he's cleaning up the whole lawn, and the guy's name that was the richest Jew, his name is Kalba Sabua. Kalba Sabua had a daughter named Rachel. And somehow, Rachel took a liking to this Akiva. And you can imagine, like, when the father-in-law, Kalba Sabua, the richest guy on the planet, realized that his daughter is taking a liking to the landscaper. Can imagine. You know, she was destined to marry the greatest, you know, and he had respect for learning and rabbis and was a very observant person. So he wanted someone that was a, you know, person of stature, person that was wise, a tremendous wisdom, that would be perfect for his daughter. You know, someone that obviously the ability to have wealth, but and support whoever it is that he was going to bring in, but he wanted someone that was a very, very learned Jew. In essence, a big rabbi. And he was in shock when he found out his daughter was interested in the landscaper. And she eventually comes to her father and says, I want to marry this Akiva. And the father basically almost had a heart attack. And he said, if you marry this guy, you are completely out of the family. No connection, no support. You're on your own. She said, you know what she said? I don't care. I'm marrying this man. And they go and get married, Akiva and Rachel. And they were so poor. They were so poor. They had to literally sleep on the grain as a bed. That was their bed. Literally the grain that they were able to pick out from the fields that was left over, straw. They just made that and kind of made mattresses and out of this straw that was left out in the field. That's how poor they were. And this woman gave up, think about it, she was the richest, she's like a princess, in essence, if you can imagine. She literally gave up everything for this Akiva.
So did she regret her decision?
What did she see? What did Rachel see in Akiva? That she was willing to give up everything. She could have had any, she was a beautiful woman, she was recognized as a, you know, an attractive, beautiful woman, very attractive, beautiful woman, and could have had basically anyone. Anyone was her pick of her choice. She's attractive. Her father is the richest guy on the planet. You know, she could have the choice of whoever she wants to marry, and she chose him. That's obviously what the father was going nuts about. What did she see? What did she see? She saw the potential. She saw within it the Ein Tova. She saw within the good eye within her. She was able to see what will become of him. What is his potential? What does he have? Obviously, Akiva didn't see it because until 40 years old, he got married at 40 also. She was a younger girl. Until 40, he didn't see it. But what did she? She saw in him. She saw it in him. She saw that potential. For Akiva, though, what was the moment that changed Akiva? Obviously, it was the woman that saw the tremendous potential in him. But as you know, or hopefully you'll know, that a person cannot change or become a great individual just through someone else's encouragement, right? Someone else can see the greatness in you, but the only person that can make and utilize that greatness and utilize the potential that every person has inside of them is that person himself. No matter how much encouragement, no how much effort or support another person can give, in the end, that person himself has to make that leap, that move, that decision to become a great individual. So what was that moment for Rabbi Akiva? So number one was obviously marrying Rachel. But number two, our sages describe the moment. What did Akiva see when that changed his life? It says that Akiva was walking by a slow riverbed. But before the riverbed, and there was water that was dripping down from the rocks on top, and just little drips dropping down, and it was hitting this rock, right? Just drip at a time, drip, drip, drip on the side of a riverbed, and this, as it was coming down, it was going on a hill, these little drips were coming down, sprinkling down the rock, and then falling down on this one rock. And you see, as he was looking at the rock, he saw a massive indent in the rock, massive, like, it was, you see two rocks like coming out, like it was at one time obviously one, and then a huge gorge in between. And he just saw the one drip and another drip and another drip. And he looked at it and he said, how did this rock become indented so much? What was it all from?
Drip.
The answer was the drip. Little drip. One Warner. War. What is that?
Like Time's Torture.
Like Time's Torture? So the rock was completely smoothed down and indented from what?
Erosion.
Water. Little drips of water. So Akiva looked at it and said, if this little drops, these little drops of water that are fluid, that's soft, that really has almost no form, because as you try to grab or hold water, what happens to it? Rolls off, just goes away, right? If that can penetrate a powerful, huge, massive rock, that if you took sledgehammers against it, you took axes against it, what are you going to do with it? Nothing. You're not even going to take anything off of it. It's powerful, huge boulder. If that little, soft, nothing water can penetrate within a rock, so can the words of Torah, which are an analogy to water, penetrate my heart. And he said, at that point, I'm going to go learn. I'm going to go learn. And he actually went and he sat in kindergarten class as a 40-year-old man. Right? As a 40-year-old man, what is it? Billy Madison. As he's sitting in kindergarten class, you can imagine the embarrassment as the teacher is saying, Aleph, Beis, Beis, Aleph, Beis, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, right? And he's actually going and he's saying, as these like little 3-year-olds and Rabbi Akiva sitting in this little chair in kindergarten, saying the alphabet. And not only he went to kindergarten, but moved up to first, to second, third, fifth, seventh, 12th, and continued to grow and continued to learn until he became the greatest sage. So he became the greatest sage, so much so he became the leader and the teacher to the entire Jewish people. Question. What was the revelation? Was he really just sitting there and realizing science? Oh, really? You know, like, did he not know scientifically that water can just erode things? He didn't know, he didn't realize that before. That was like the big epiphany. He had a science project and all of a sudden he realized, you know, oh wow, water, you know, water is powerful and can erode the greatest of moving parts of the earth. I mean, like, that was his great epiphany.
Well, he saw it as a metaphor.
Obviously that was the metaphor, but what was the great epiphany? What aspect was the great, like, momentous change in his life? What triggered that whole aspect of realizing, boom, somebody, you know, wow.
Somebody giving up everything to give him a chance.
What?
Somebody giving up everything to give him a chance.
Well, it takes time.
Yeah.
There's something definitely to that, yeah. What? We'll get back to that. What?
It takes time to achieve what you want. You gotta.
Takes time to achieve what you want. Excellent. Anything else? Think of the analogy that he was...
Something so small. Something larger.
Something small that can lead to something larger. Yes, exactly. One other point.
Forever.
What?
Can leave its mark forever.
Can leave its mark forever. All right. Correct. Yeah. Again, going back to the analogy. Yeah.
He saw it.
Oh, can have such a big impact. Maybe that's something so small like the water. It can have such a big impact, like the fact that it eroded the stone.
Beautiful. So the idea is, it's one drop. And another drop, and another drop, and another drop, and another drop. It's not massive ocean coming and wiping it down. What was it? And another one. And another one. It's one little small drop at a time that made a massive erosion. We think inside of ourselves, we need massive changes and oceans of things that we need to accomplish, and it needs to happen now, and it needs to do it now, and everything has to happen within instant moment, now, do it, or I'm nothing. Or it can't happen. Rabbi Akiva realized, how am I going to change? I have a person that will support me, that will encourage me, that looks and sees who I am, that has the potential. She gave up everything. And obviously he believed in himself to be able to marry such a woman. Right? Think about on that level, if you don't believe in yourself, you're going to say to yourself, I'm me, the landscaper, I'm going to take you away to give you what? Me, the landscaper, I'm going to take you away and give you what? What do you want? I can't give you riches.
Flowers.
I'm not going to give you wisdom. What can I give you? What do you see in me that I'm going to be able to give back to you? So he obviously saw that, yes, she sees in me the potential, and I realized that, yes, I have that. But what can I do? How can I accomplish? How do I become the person that she knows and I know that I can become? Where did it come from? And that's the epiphany. See the drops. The drop was the key. What was the drop? I don't need a massive ocean to make the massive change and become the greatest sage on the planet. What I need is small drops of continuous action. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And eventually, after the 1,000th drop, and the 2,000th drop, and the 5,000th, and 10, and 100, and I look and I see what happens, you see a massive crater of change. Massive. But if I would have looked from the beginning and say, how do I get it? How do I break that rock? It's impossible. There's no way I can do it. How can it happen? That's what he's saying to himself. I have all the tools. Everything's there. How it's set. But how do I go and actually do it? It's that little drop. Going back and saying, Ein Tova. Ein Tova is looking at life in the right perspective with a good perspective. Number one, obviously, I have to have that positive outlook in life. I'd have to know I can do it. It's inside of me. There's people around that support me. There's people around that believe in me, and I have to believe in myself. The goodness is now I know I need to accomplish. I need to be able to accomplish. How do I do it? How can I do it? How can I make those accomplishments? Maybe, again, the negative side will say, you can't do it. It's too massive. It's too massive of a rock. You're going to need massive things to happen. And who can do massive things all at once? No one. Who can become the greatest teacher from not knowing Aleph Bet, not knowing the alphabet, being illiterate? It's impossible, right? And looking at it like a mountain hanging over you. The answer is, you don't. All you have to do is one drop at a time. One small little piece. And then the next piece. And then the next piece. And then the next step. And then the next step. And then the next step. It's a continuation of the drops. That is the goal. That is the goal. That is the purpose. That's the way the direction will lead you. So getting back to our original question. What about the negativity? Excuse me. I gave the answer. Where is the other side inside of us? It's still all us, right? It's not. It's the negativity inside. It's the negativity inside. It's the voice that I saying, I can't. It's too big. I'm not good enough. I can't do it. What are people going to say about me? What are other people going to think of me? You can't go that route. That's not you. That's not the person inside of you. That's not you. Yeah, that's the voice that's coming out. But that's the negative voice inside of you. Or the voice that says, just be comfortable, listen to the peer pressure. Don't make changes. Yeah, you know you're miserable where you are, or you're not happy where you are, but it's so much easier just to be where you are and not move, not make that choice, not to start the little drops, not to make the little steps. It's just easier. Why? Because this is your framework. Don't do anything. Don't push yourself. It's okay. Be comfortable. Relax. Where is that coming from? That's the voice that's trying to hold you back. That's the negativity. How do you decide which voice is right? It's the Ein Tova. It's the Ein Tova. I'll give you one other story within Rabbi Akiva. One that I think we've mentioned already. So he comes home after studying, right? He's been away from the house. He's been away because his wife actually, at this point now, once he became already like a Talmud scholar, his wife said, like, you know, go to the best. Leave. Because in our town where we're living, you're not going to become the greatest. You got to go to the next level. Like, go, and I'm sending you. Go, leave to study to a different place outside of the town where you're going to become the greatest. And she sends him off. And after a long time, he comes back. And he sees, as he's walking up to the door, and he knocks on the door. She opens the door and she's like, you know, almost like falls over. Because she sees her husband after a very long hiatus of not seeing him. And she sees a line of people all the way back. And there's 24,000 of his students that came up. And she's like, who are all these people? And he says, he looks and he says to her, actually, and he turns around and says to them, all that is mine and all that I have and all that I've accomplished is really all yours, as he says to his wife. It's all yours. All those students and everything that he accomplished was all her, because she saw the original belief in him that started the catalyst. Now, can you imagine the next part? What happened to all 24,000 students? They died. All 24,000. All died in what turned out to be the war against the Romans. Physically, they died. Spiritually, they died because they didn't honor one another. I think we've talked about that previously. So they all died, all 24,000. Can you imagine? He got to the greatest level, went from zero, became the greatest sage, had 24,000 students, and then all died. And now he's at an elderly age. Can you imagine what his next thought process is? Like, what is he thinking at that point? Yeah. What? Write a book? Yeah. Time to give up, no?
Yeah, give up.
That's it. It's over. Like, I'm done. I'm finished. Like, it was all a cruel joke. Can you imagine that situation right at that point in life? What did he do? Start all over again. Didn't make 24,000 students. You know how many students he got? Five. That's it. That's all that was left. But those five are the ones that we have basically the entire Torah, all of our knowledge comes from those five. One of them, by the way, is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the one that we had Lag BaOmer, we talked about last week, right? The redactor of the entire Kabbalah, the Zohar, all the mysticism, basically from all those five students are all of our knowledge. All of our Torah knowledge come from those five. But you can imagine at that moment, that pinpoint moment in life, you would say, what? I'm ready to give up. It's all over. It's all finished. And instead, what did he say? He never gave up on what? Ein Tova. Being able to see the direction, see the goodness. I need to accomplish. Doesn't make a difference. This setback, another setback, it's all finished. I could give up right now. The voices in his head at that moment could be saying, what? Give up. It's over. 24,000 students are dead. It's over. It's not going to happen anymore. You're too old. You can't do it. Everything's finished. All of life is done. It's a cruel joke. Just stop already. You tried. You gave it your best. Move on. Go retire. It's over. But what did he hear? I need to keep going. That drop. All it takes is I just need to keep going. Another drop. Small drops. At this point, not 24,000, but only five. He could look at life and say, I failed. I had 24,000. All I have is five. But look at the sea of what it created. From those five, we had thousands of generations. Thousands of people. And all our knowledge and all our understanding came from those five. It's a powerful lesson in all of us. You all have, every single one of us have those voices inside of us. And it's so incredibly difficult to discern what's right, what's wrong. Which direction do I want to go? Do I really want to do this? Do I really want to make the next step in life? Do I really want to make the next challenge in life? Do I want to overcome this? Or do I want to be comfortable and just stay in my little space, in my little box? And I'll be fine. I'll be okay. I don't need to do that. Or listen to the negativity inside of you and saying you can't do it. It's too much already. You're past this, okay? This was a different stage in life. Maybe it was something else. If I grew up in a different lifestyle, a different family, different potential, I can't do this. I can't accomplish. I can't change. I can't grow. I can't become bigger. It's not me. It's too massive. It's too massive to do. It's just, I can't. I don't even know where to start. The trait that will change all that is Ein Tova. Believing in yourself. Seeing the direction of your actions. Having an outside person, having support from person and people that you care about and care about you. Honestly, that's a huge part of it. Developing the people that you know are positive in your life and not negative. And the end understanding that it doesn't take massive oceans of action. It takes little drops of continuous drop, another one, until you add on and add on and add on, and then you can see and look back and say, wow, look how much I've accomplished, look how much I've grown, look how much I've developed. Such a powerful lesson. I'll finish with this. I mentioned the beautiful mind. The last scene in the movie. I cheated. I YouTubed it. It has the last scene. It's 3 minutes. I saw it. The book is actually a little bit different, and probably has a better account. I heard it from this part. I heard from another rabbi, Rabbi Jacobson. It's a great, great ending scene that the movie kind of got it wrong. The last scene, he's giving the Nobel Prize speech, right? And he says, very similar to what, like, the Rachel in his life, right? He married Alyssa something, Alyssa Nash. And originally she, I don't know if the movie went into it, but he married her and then divorced, right? And they divorced after only like 6 years of marriage. Why? Because she realized that he was nuts. He was crazy. He was really hearing all kinds of different voices. He became split personality. He thought people were chasing him. He actually was going to get tenure. Think about it. He was going to get a tenure in University of Chicago, an Ivy League school, and becoming a professor of mathematics and economics. And he declined it because he said he was going to be declared emperor of Antarctica pretty soon. Yeah. So that's how crazy he was becoming. So much so that he became destitute. He became homeless. He went from that to level to becoming homeless. She found him homeless, his wife, and took him in. She took him in, even though they were divorced. His ex-wife took him in. And basically after 10 years of this battle, he finally realized that he's got voices and demons inside of him that he can't control. And he figured out that he was able to get help in the 70s and start putting his life back together. Medication, therapy, all the different things that he was able to get a hold of and put his life back in order. Princeton, actually, later they remembered him because he went there and he wrote many papers. Princeton took him back and he actually started becoming a professor again. Until a point in 1994 where he won the Nobel Prize. His famous thing that he made, his most famous one, thing that he accomplished was called game theory. It's studying economics, studying a lot of different parts. I don't know if anyone here else heard of it. Mm-hmm. But during that final speech at the Nobel Prize in 1994, by the way, he remarried that wife that took care of him in 2001, right? So he was divorced in 1963 and got remarried in 2001. But she took care of him all throughout that time. So that last scene he's saying, right, I've gone through life trying to figure out what logic is. I've gone through metaphysics and nature and gone to the brink of insanity and come back. And all of it came that I realized all logic and everything that comes through is the mysterious aspects of love. And that came from one person. And he points to her and says, it came from you. And all that I have and all that I am is from you. Thank you. But the next scene, and I thought it was very, very similar kind of with Rabbi Akiva, right? Well, the next scene is, in the movie, it doesn't do its justification at all. Kind of like slides it under the carpet. But the book really accentuates it even more. The next scene is as he's walking out of this Nobel Prize event, all of a sudden, he gets an attack of the mental hysteria comes back to him. And he sees what he thinks are people that are trying to get him. I mean, the communists, he always thought like communists were after him. And he saw like what he thought was professors that were going to try and stab him in the back. And they were all there lining up to come at him. And his wife is looking at him and seeing his face. And she, at this point, knows what's going on and recognizes it. And he sees like the glare, the glaze at his eyes as he's staring out. And he's like getting nervous and afraid. And she asks him like, John, what's wrong? And he's just not answering. She says, John, what's wrong? And he says, turns to her and says, nothing. And gives her a kiss and they walk off. And that was like the greatest moment that, again, the movie messed it up. That they just kind of like swept it out. Like they show these people on the side and he kind of like says, oh, nothing. And they kind of walk off. But it was the greatest moment, really. Why? Because he was able to overcome the voices inside. He was able to realize that's the voices of negativity. That's the voices of destruction. Again, inside of us, thank God we're not, at least most of us, don't have those split personalities or voices, but we all have the voices inside of negativity, of destruction, of saying, don't do it, you can't do it, holding us back from becoming and accomplishing what we know we can do. Every single one of us have to develop the Ein Tova, the good eye, the ability to see the greatness inside of ourselves, the greatness of our actions, the ability to accomplish, but it's not through massive, incredible actions. It's from little drops, being consistent on the path of knowing what the right direction in life and what's the right voice inside of us. And be able to completely knock out and ignore and say, that is the voice of negativity. That is the voice of destruction. That's not going to lead me anywhere. I need to find that path of Ein Tova, the good eye in every single one of your lives. You need to find that. And in that aspect, that's how you become a great individual. Each and every one of you has that ability to do inside of you, and you have to do it. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.